contemplated that it's a starfish, and yet it still is. I live on this planet and I enjoy all of the benefits that God has created. I look up into the sky and I see those clouds of white. And I'm told that that is actually just stars and stars and stars out hundreds of billions of light years away. And I have to start thinking about what that means. Not just that it is, but what it means. It means that I am loved by a God who can do that. And so in verse 2, he says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, and on the seventh day he rested from all of his work. And then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So here we get the idea of Sabbath. We're going to look at a couple ideas. We're going to look at Sabbath and we're going to look at tithing. I don't think that any discussion that we're ever going to have about money is going to make any sense until we understand Sabbath. I want you to jump with me, if you would, over to Exodus 20. If you want to, you can go back and you can read Exodus 20, 1 through 22, and it's the account of God giving Moses the Ten Commandments. Most of the commandments are actually pretty easy. They don't take up a lot of space, which is great because he had to cut them into stone, right? You don't want to have to, you know, make the stones too big. I guess that would have been, you know, you want to be somewhat efficient in all of this. There's a few times where God actually spreads out the story a little bit. Now, one of my favorite Bible classes of all time was taught by Kent Allen. It was right after Kelly and I got married. It was in the Young Marrieds class at Memorial Road. And Kent pointed out to me that it's really interesting that there's two tablets, because they're really, the Ten Commandments are broken into two themes, and that's our relationship with God and our relationship with others. So if you look at the whole Ten Commandments and you break them in half, you're going to find that the first half is all about our relationship with God, and the second half is all about our relationship with others. And in fact, if you want to find symmetry, you'll find that Jesus does the exact same thing in the Beatitudes, and he breaks it down, and he starts the beginning of the Beatitudes in our relationship with God, and he ends the Beatitude with our relationship with others. So we see some commonality in the way that God communicates to us. This is going to be important later in the class, so pay attention. So God starts off with, you've got to understand something, and that is you need to be in relationship, you need to have an understanding of me, and once we have that, then we're going to start working on how you live that out among other people. What I really want to look in this passage in is, of course, verses 8 through 11, where we're going to look at specifically where the Sabbath is commanded. Starting in verse 8, he says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male, nor your female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. Because in the 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So since God did all of this in 6 days, we're supposed to take a day off? No. What we're supposed to be doing on the Sabbath day is looking at pictures like this and thinking about what it means. We're supposed to be not working and pursuing our own goals. We're supposed to be sitting still and pondering the fact that a God who could create the whole universe in 6 days is our Father. That a God who can speak the universe into being, a God who can breathe life into clay and make it a man, a God who can take a rib out of a man and make a woman, a God who can make the diversity of the planet, the diversity of the universe, is your Father. We could just sit here and think about that for the rest of the class period, about what that means when I'm in stress. We could think about what that means when I'm between jobs. We could think about what that means when I'm thinking about buying a shiny new car, when I'm thinking about going on vacation, when I'm thinking about how I deal with my money. We need to start with the idea of who God is and what he is able to do and why he did it. We know, starting in the book of John, that John is so amazed by the immensity of God's plan that he starts back at creation in the gospel, and he says, look, in the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was with God during creation, and there was nothing that God made that he didn't make through the Word, through Jesus. What's he saying? He's saying, in my mind, he's saying, look, God has never done anything great that he didn't do through partnership, that he didn't do in relationship with others. We struggle with relationship, right? Anybody here think relationship is always easy? Relationship is the nature of God. The Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit exist in relationship. God invites us through his creation. He invites us through his kingdom. He invites us to participate in all of the things that he has authored and will still yet author. That involves our money. So, as you think about, do I have enough? Isn't that always the question? Do I have enough? Maybe should I have some more? What do I do when I don't have enough? How am I going to make it work? We need to start here. God said, every week I want you to stop for a day. I made everything. You can stop for a day. I've given you everything. I've given you the universe. You can stop for a day. And in that day, I want you to think about who I am and what I'm capable of. I'm capable of blessing you. I'm capable of taking care of you. I'm capable of making plans for you. And I'm capable of working through your weakness and accomplishing amazing things. I did this in 6 days. Think about that. God was so serious about it that if you broke the Sabbath, you were subject unto death. Why is that such a big deal? Because if you stop thinking about who God is and what he's capable of and the fact that he loves you, what really do you have left to anchor to? You really are out on your own. God says, I want you to stop and think about whose you are. Let's move on. So in the Old Testament, we have the tithe. And the easy way that I was raised thinking about that is it means you give 10% of what you make. And then we think, as Christians, we go, well, we're still not under the old law. So, you know, I've heard preachers say, so it should be more than that because we're under grace, which is much better than the law. And I'll let you solve that for your own. But I want to go back and look at how the tithe actually worked, because there really wasn't just a tithe. There were actually 3 tithes. So let's jump into those tithes really quick. And I want to go to Numbers 18. And we're going to look at verse 21. And then we're going to look at 24. In verse 21, he says, I give the Levites all the tithes in Israel as their inheritance for the return for the work they do while serving at the tent of meeting. So the first tithe was for the church. That's how we would say it today. It was for God's kingdom. It was for God's governmental structure of how the Israelites were going to work. That was 10% of everything that they made. That was the first tithe. And again in verse 24, instead I give to the Levites as their inheritance the tithes that Israel presents as an offering to the Lord. That is why I said concerning them, they will have no inheritance among the Israelites. So all the crops or all the animals that were brought in, even part of the sacrifices, the Levites got. So who took care of the Levites? Somebody shouted out. I don't know if you do that here. Who took care of the Levites? I heard 2 great answers, because they're both right. The whole of Israel and God did. What is that? It's partnership. It's relationship. Where did the whole of Israel get its stuff? From God. Where did the Levites get their stuff? From God through the people who were in partnership with God. So that was the first tithe. We kind of have that tithe, if you don't like that word, we kind of have that system still in some way today. We pass the plate around. That plate takes care of the maintenance of this building. That plate takes care of salaries and class materials for the kids, Cheerios and Goldfish and all that kind of stuff that, you know, you find on the floor. It's wonderful. Okay? So we still do that today. But God wasn't done there. That wasn't it. So the other one was over in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 14, starting in 22. I'm going to read through 27. Be sure to set aside a tenth of all your fields produce each year. If you haven't read this before or heard this before, pay attention. This isn't the tithe you're thinking of. Be sure to set aside a tenth of all your fields produce each year. Eat the tithe of your new grain, new wine, and olive oil, and the firstborn of your herds and the flocks, in the presence of the Lord your God at the place he will choose as a dwelling for his name, so that you may learn to revere the Lord your God always. But if that place is too distant, and you've been blessed by the Lord your God, and can't carry your tithe, it's a big tithe, and you can't carry your tithe because the place where the Lord will choose to put his name is so far away, then exchange your tithe for silver and take the silver with you and go to the place the Lord your God will choose. Use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. And don't neglect the Levites. So what is this second tithe? The second tithe is kind of like a vacation fund. This is an interesting idea, isn't it? God says, I want you to set aside a tenth of everything that you make and produce, and once a year I want you to come to the temple, and I want you to eat it all and have an absolutely smashing time. I want you to bring your servants. I want you to bring the foreigners that are hanging out with you. I want you to bring everybody. And if I've blessed you so much you can't possibly put it on a cart and sell it, and when you get there, restock and have an absolutely amazing time. But do it in my presence. Why? It's a celebration in front of God for all of the things that he's done for us, for all of the blessings. How well do we celebrate today? How well do we celebrate today with the idea of somebody not coming up and saying, well, that looks wasteful? Anybody ever been to a wedding and said to yourself, I can't believe they spent that kind of money on a wedding? This is the kind of stuff that they're doing here. And in fact, it's not just because they want to, it's because God said, I want you to do that. I want you to go burn 10% of what I give you in my presence to remind you how generous I really am. And don't forget the Levites. That's an interesting tithe. Another way to think of this tithe is it's kind of a spiritual retreat. This is a time where they should be doing this, right? Let's go to the temple and look at all the things that God has done. Go to the temple and ponder all the ways that God has blessed us as a family. Go to the temple and spend some time contemplating the fact that you are a child of the God who created the universe. But there's one more tithe. We're going to go to Deuteronomy 14:28. And he says, at the end of every 3 years, bring all the tithes of that year's produce. So 2 years you have a party, 1 year you don't. So at the end of every 3 years, bring all the tithes of that year's produce and store it in your town, so that the Levites, who have no allotment or inheritance of their own, and the foreigners, the fatherless, and the widows who live in your towns may come, eat, and be satisfied, and so the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. So on the third year, you collect this 10%, you stick it in your towns, and you take care of your Levites, you take care of the fatherless, you take care of the orphans, you take care of the widows, you take care of everybody. So who takes care of the unfortunate? Who takes care of the poor in God's system? We do, and God does. If we don't, what happens? Does God do it anyway? This is a real question. If we decide not to, does God do it anyway? I heard a yes. Anybody not like this question? I don't like this question. The real question is why wouldn't we? If God has blessed us, if He's the God of the universe, if He can take care of us, how can He take care of us? We've just talked about three ways. You may find yourself in some of these strange places. You may not be the person who is amazingly blessed. And you look up at the stars and you go, God, I'm not amazingly blessed. How are you going to take care of me? God can take care of you through the tithe. God can take care of you through His people. God can take care of you through Himself. Right? He can do both. So the question is if it all came from His, it's all His, why do we hold on to it so tight? What are we so afraid of? Not having enough. I want to go back to this idea of the meaning of money. You started developing an individual sense of the meaning of money when you were old, and probably when your grandfather gave you your first quarter or nickel for an ice cream cone. And you've been developing that sense of money even before your language skills were very well developed. And that has caused you some problems, am I right? Anybody in here ever done something with money that they, A, wish they hadn't of, and B, can't exactly explain why they did? Show of hands. Okay, should be everybody. Let me get the rest of them. Has there ever been a spouse, and has your spouse ever done something with money? There we go. If I were to take my shoes off and show you how I tie my shoes, I would have to do something really interesting, and that is I'd have to turn my brain off a little bit to do it, because I don't use language when I tie my shoes. The only time, in fact, that I've ever used language when I tie my shoes is when I taught my kids how to tie their shoes. And I found that to be very frustrating, because I actually had to put language to something that my brain does automatically. You with me? I'd have to say to myself, now how exactly do I do this? I take this one in my left, and I take that, and quit talking. I'm trying to figure this out. And you look like an idiot trying to teach somebody how to tie their shoes, right? These processes in our brain are hardwired. We've done them so many times. For the sake of efficiency, we've gotten rid of any language that would attach to it because that slows us down. When you drive your car, you don't think left hand, right hand, turn to the right, grab the gear. We don't have gear shifts anymore, do we? Grab my phone. No, we don't do that either. But you don't have any language in your head when you're driving your car. You've gotten so accustomed to it that there's no language going on up here. There's a lot of things going on financially with you that do not have language attached to them. That makes it very hard to manage. If you've ever had a spending problem, if you've ever had an eating problem, if you've ever had, I don't care what the problem is, you probably have some things going on in your head that don't have a lot of language attached to them. God says, I want you to be deliberate with your finances. I want you to be deliberate with your love for me. I want you to be deliberate in your giving. That's going to require you to do some digging if you're finding yourself struggling with obeying Him. You're going to have to do some digging and try to figure out, why is it that I'm doing this? One of the things that I try to do with couples that I work with is I try to get them to go through a process of looking at where all their money goes. So one of the things that I recommend couples to do is to go back through a full year of their finances, through their check registers, credit card receipts, all those kinds of things, and look at where their money went. And I always encourage them to do it together because typically one person takes care of the finances and the other one is kind of a passenger. Does that make sense? The reason that that happens is because one of you has been dealing with the little data, the little receipts, the little expenses, the bills, the checks, the stamps, the envelopes, and the other one is doing something else, of value, but something else. And as you know, that if I tie my shoes enough times, I will learn how to do it without thinking about it, and you will learn how to do the money without thinking about it, which is what we really want to do with everything. We don't want to think about it. We just want to get it done. But if we really want to know what's going on in here, we have to start actually looking at the reality of what's actually happening with our funds. How much money is going to this? How much money is going to that? And then at the end of that, am I okay with it? I tell people all the time, I try to make things simple. There's only two things you can control financially: what you make and what you spend. That's it. Those are the only two levers you can pull. What you spend is often a little bit easier to adjust than what you make. Does that make sense? Sometimes it's a little harder to change jobs or increase your income. We've all tried to do that at times, and we know it's not easy. So the idea is, how can we as a couple, as a family, as an individual, start getting some understanding of how it is that we do money? Because we have assigned a ton of value to this thing. How many people have driven by the signs and saw how big the mega, whatever it's called, the mega millions or whatever got this last week? I think it was over $300 million. Anybody ponder how much good you could do with $300 million? Anybody ponder how much debt you could pay off with $300 million? Anybody ponder how that would change your life? Take a look up there. It's more than $300 million. Did you know that there's a moon in our solar system? It circles around Pluto. That scientists believe that the moon is made entirely of carbon. And because of the gravitational forces exerted on it and for the time that it's been up there, they're pretty certain it's a solid diamond. God has a diamond the size of a moon. Made it. It's worth more than $300 million. Not that you can go get it, but it's there, it's his. You ever wondered why Christians don't always win the lottery? If God had a money problem, it'd be really easy to rig the lottery. He could make the numbers come. He could have somebody in each congregation win the lottery once every 10 years, and every church would be flush with cash to do all the things that you want to do. If God's capable of doing that, why wouldn't he do that? Not only that, it'd be good for our schools, right? That's what they told us about the lottery. So why in the world would God not give us lots of money to do all the good things that we kind of have a heart to do? Somebody want to give me an answer? He wants it to come from us. Anyone else? How about this one? He already has. He already has blessed you with tons of stuff. And he's asked you through these three tithes to basically accomplish three things financially. And that is, he wants you to be fully invested in his kingdom. Okay? God has blessed you with all of this stuff. He is a God who can create the universe in 6 days or one day or however long he chooses to do it. He is an amazingly powerful, providing God. And he says, I want you to be part not only of my creation, but of new creation. I want you to partner with me in the things that I'm going to create next. That's what he's called you to do. The other thing is he has said is, I'm going to bless you in ways that I want you to celebrate because I can replenish it. I want you to be lavish. I want you to celebrate with others. I want you to be hospitable. I want you to enjoy yourselves. And I want you to know that that enjoyment is a gift from me, the Father, to you. And then third, he says, I want you to be my hands and feet in taking care of those who have less. I will take care of you as a family. You go out and take care of people the way I've taken care of you. Are we doing that? We're getting ready this afternoon to have a discussion about estate planning. Estate planning is really more of a legal idea. It's an idea about moving a piece of property from this person's name into this person's name. And we're going to talk about some of those things. But if you aren't amazed by this, if you aren't moved to your soul by this, then the discussion that we're going to have in the other room this afternoon isn't going to mean a whole lot. It's a bill. I probably ought to give God some of this. It's mine. I've earned it. Worked a long time for it. Maybe my kids will do something good with it. Maybe they won't. But it'd probably be a good idea to give God some of this, some of my stuff. Really? Really? Your stuff? Your stuff? But it's also bigger than that. It's the idea of, what have we been part of our whole lives? Have we been part of amassing wealth, and are we concerned now about what's going to happen to that wealth as we leave it? Are we like the person in the Bible who's concerned about the person who's going to inherit his money? Or have we been part of building God's kingdom, and it is just a natural, totally natural thing for us to contemplate how we're going to continue to build God's kingdom or how we can bless God's kingdom as we hand back to him the things that he put into our hands while we were here. I also want you to remember the idea that it's not just the money. God gave you a ton of tools. He gave you a ton of tools. Are you using those tools? They're his. Are you using those tools to build his kingdom? If you're not, then your money probably seems like a difficult one to give away to. If you are, if you're contemplating all the ways that I can be part of God's kingdom, build for eternity, then your money is a natural thing to throw in the kitty also. I'm saying all of this, and I'm saying it a little tough, because I want you to look inside of yourself and say, have I really given myself to the task that God has put in front of me to build his eternal kingdom? God created the universe through his word, through his son. God is building his kingdom through everybody in this room. Have you taken that task? Have you looked at your inventory of the things that God has blessed you with individually and as a people to say, let's get after this. This is what the God who made that in a day will provide for the things that need to get done. It won't necessarily be greenbacks. God will give us the resources. God has given us the resources that we need to accomplish the tasks he's put in front of us. Are we going to be a people who accept that challenge? So let me wrap up. Maybe this morning you're in the hole. Maybe this morning you have more debt than you can reach every month. Maybe you're on the other side of the aisle, and maybe this morning you have more than, quite frankly, you know how to spend. Maybe you have thought to yourself, you know what, if I gave 10%, I'm not sure that the elders would use it well. Maybe you think to yourself, you know what, I'd give some to church, but I really like to control my giving to other things. I want you to think about, how are you locked in to taking the things that are God's and building the kingdom that he has called us to build? If you're in the group that is trying to figure out how to make ends meet every month, Are you praying about the idea that, God, it's not just about that we want to make our bills, it's not just that we want to be solvent, God, we want to be a blessing for your kingdom, and we can't do it financially now, but God, looking forward, we're going to make sure that as a couple, as a family, as an individual, we're going to do our best to not make things worse financially. We're going to do our best to get out of that hole. We're going to do our best to get into a place where we have things to share with others. That's a slightly different prayer than, God, I can't meet my bills. Give me more. All of us, every single person in this room, would benefit from a sober internal conversation about how am I investing in God's kingdom with the tools that are God's, that he has loaned me, that one day he will take back. It is a wonderful thing to realize that the creator of the universe has your back. And that really nothing can separate you from him. And that you're surrounded by a family who loves you and who's committed to you and can care for you and can pull you up when things are tough. And that you can turn around and do the exact same thing for others. So this afternoon, we're going to wrap up and we're going to talk about a little bit more specific in estate planning, but we're also going to talk about just some general ideas about biblically how we address money. So thank you, and let's close in prayer real quick. God, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for every morning that you have given us and those before us. God, I thank you for this church, for those who are trying to build your kingdom, for those who are sacrificing and loving the way that you've called us to love. God, be with us today. Show us daily the ways that you take care of us so that we won't take you for granted. We pray all these things in your Son's name. Amen. Thank you.